This week on Art of the Air features acclaimed jazz artist from New York City, Rick Della Rata, who founded Jazz for Peace after witnessing firsthand the events of 9/11 from a nearby rooftop. Next, self-taught emerging artist Laurie Renee Moore, who specializes in painting with an aim towards realism. Our spotlights on the 4th annual NWI Superstar Singing Competition that supports the Wounded Warrior Project.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther, Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. He's got a program going on that's called the NWI Superstar, and it's going to be September 27th, but it's an ongoing contribution. You can also, if you're interested, by August 30th, you can be a sponsor of this program. Robert Head, who is the executive director of the NWI Superstar, starting their fourth season. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Hello. Welcome.
Well, we want you to tell a little bit about your background and how it led to you establishing NWI Superstar.
Great. Well, I'm a veteran. I served in the Navy from 2004 until 2012. And I moved to the Northwest Indiana area a few years back, got together with a few people, one of them, George Atkins, Robin Bender out of Portage, and Ray out of Hobart. And we came together and put this karaoke competition together, kind of willy-nilly. But it was put together because during the pandemic, a lot of venues didn't have a lot of people getting together. A lot of people weren't able to sing karaoke. As you know, before the pandemic, everybody was getting together, doing things. But right around the time of the pandemic, things just kind of came to a shutdown. And we found that it hurt a lot of veterans, too, because there wasn't any interaction. So after the pandemic started clearing up a little bit, we started to get together, wanted a way for the community to get involved, wanted music to be kind of the centerfold of it, and then wanted a way to give back to the veteran community. So that's how we got started.
Well, thank you for your service, first of all.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So, Robert, do you choose different charities that support veterans each year? Is there a different charity, or is it the Wounded Warriors every time?
Yeah, so we worked with the VFW here in Lake Station. We worked with the Wounded Warriors Program. We're looking for other veterans organizations that need the help, especially like in Gary, where there's a veteran village where veterans can go if they're homeless. But it's mostly for veterans at this point. We have another division of NWI Superstar, which is for the minis, and that focuses more towards like childcare, things like the Boys and Girls Club, things like that. But we did do a Boys and Girls Club last year since they were one of our partners and our sponsors. But we are kind of deviating from that at this point and just focusing on veteran organizations in the community for the adults and then like Boys and Girls Club for the minis.
So you're now in your fourth season. Tell us a little bit about what the actual competition is, about the Superstar competition, eligibility, you know, things like that, who's participating and how it works.
Yeah, so people from all over Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana region audition. They audition from around May timeframe until the end of July. And then they audition for about 2-3 weeks. then the show actually is a seven-week process. So we go from 50 contestants down to 25, and then those 25 contestants compete for 6 weeks until the grand finale, which is actually coming up September 27th. And then the top winner's chosen, second place is chosen, and then they're all divided into little teams. So even the first place team wins too. And then they get to kind of showcase themselves at every summer. So if you look at the calendar around July 27th and 28th, we usually have a concert that's held in Lake Station, Riverview Park. And they get to showcase their talents on a stage with a live band. It's really pretty awesome.
And what prizes do you have for the winners?
Well, everybody gets a prize, which is really great. So if you're an audience member, you get door prizes. So you get a ticket when you come in. They give out TVs and like cell phone cases. Different vendors and different sponsors out in the community give out like free meals. So you're getting to participate that way. And then if you're an actual contestant, you're getting your first place grand prize, which is $5,000. Second place, which is $1,000. And then a team prize, which is $500.
And who does the judging?
Yeah, so local either artists or local instructors who do vocal coaching or teaching at local schools, they usually do the coaching and the judging. In addition to that, every audience member gets a vote while they're at the facility. So every week they vote for the person they really want to stay on board, that they really thought was like really inspirational. And so those votes also get taken into account. So it's very much community engagement, community involvement, not just like, hey, we're in front of a panel and then we get to meet these people.
Doing this like once a year, it sounds like, and you talk about the minis, but everything, is that something that you might expand to maybe like a twice a year type thing?
No, we're pretty much set with the 1 year thing. It's a big production. So until you know things kind of change, we definitely want to stay 1 year at a time.
What are the criteria that your judges use for your various contestants?
Yeah, so they check vocal ability, make sure that the contestant can actually sing, what kind of songs they choose, stage presence, how they interact with the audience. You know, we originally started out with just like karaoke, but it's kind of shifted into a singing competition where they're actually performing, using sounds, going off stage, meeting the audience member, those kind of things.
Well, we're almost about in our last minute here, so I want you to have a chance to tell people how they can find it online, show dates again, cost, if there is any, you know, all those types of details.
Yeah, so you can find us online at nwisuperstar.com, where you can check out any of our social links at nwisuperstar, whether it's on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Tickets are running anywhere from $10 all the way down to zero if you're a veteran, things like that. You can find us on Eventbrite as well, looking up at NWI Superstar. And we're running from August 16th all the way through September 27th.
And September 27th is like your grand finale then, correct?
That is correct, yep.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you coming on air. That's Robert Hidd, the executive director of NWI Superstar. And on September 27th, Geno's in Hobart is where the final performance will be. And if you in before August 30th, you can also be a sponsor of this wonderful project. Robert, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air and NWI Superstar.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Rick Delarata to Art on the Air. Rick is a singer, pianist, author, visionary, and innovator. It is his lifelong endeavor to help advance people to their highest potential through the understanding of jazz, as well as spreading peace worldwide through his Jazz for Peace World Tour. Jazz for Peace was inspired by a poem he wrote from the rooftop of his home in New York, a quarter mile away from the World Trade Center towers on 9/11. He didn't realize at the time, but Jazz for Peace would become a worldwide movement promoting peace through jazz. He also has a book, Paving the Path for Peace Through Music. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Rick. Very nice meeting you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you guys so much. So glad to be with you guys today.
Well, Rick, we appreciate you coming on our show and sharing your story. But we're also interested in your background. I always call it your origin story. And I always say, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
Well, I was born into a musical family. Actually, it dates at least as far back to my grandfather, who he asked me to go back. So I'll go way back. Actually, I can go all the way back to Spain because I used to play when I started, you know, playing live jazz gigs. People thought I was Spanish. And I said, no, I'm so sorry. I keep correcting them. And then some relatives in Italy that I never met are jazz buffs, and they heard about me, and they're like, we can't believe you're related to us and blah, blah, blah. And then they came over, one of them came over here and told me that we really came from Spain. We were aristocrats. The De La Rada family was aristocrats in Spain, like big kings or queens or whatever. And then in those days, they overthrow you and you don't run for re-election 4 years later or even 8 years later. You get out of the country. You got to get out of town. So they all just packed up with their gold or whatever they had and rushed off to, and founded a city called Caserta near Naples, Italy. Somewhere along that lineage came my grandfather, who was a great accordionist, and he came over here with nothing but an accordion and a wine press, which is really the two most important things to have if you're ever going to come to America. And he had them. And so he was the man for, he was really a big shot because, like I said, he had that wine press. He also was an incredible accordionist, and he used to play in the bootleg era, and they used to pick him up in a Bentley, and then in the back of that would be tied to a trailer with all the bootleg alcohol, blah, blah, blah. And there's all these stories that, you know, when Capone used to come over, he used to always request my grandfather, who was his favorite musician, all kinds of stories like that. I can't verify any of them, but I can tell you that I did hear my grandfather play many times, and he was phenomenal. There's a crazy story about a real famous musician in the upstate New York era who got Alzheimer's. And one day his whole family was sitting around. Hopefully I'll get to me at some point. But anyway, his whole family is sitting around in a circle. Nobody can recognize him. I mean, he can't recognize any of them. So he doesn't recognize his wife, his kids, can't recognize anybody. And all of a sudden he stands up and he goes on this big oratory about my grandfather. That Peter De La Rada was the greatest musician. And all this, how he could play anything. He could play by ear. He could do on and on about my grandfather as if he had every brain cell and then some. And then he sat back down in the chair and didn't recognize anybody. They thought they had him back, you know. But then after the big thing about my grandfather, back to not recognizing his own daughter. So it was just stuff like that. But my grandfather was kind of an idol and really laid a foundation for me to feel like, wow, you know, if he could do all that, maybe I could play a couple of tunes here and, you know, get a, you know, whatever, buy a cup of coffee or something. But I started studying on a piano that was brought in to my house on Christmas. So I thought that was Santa Claus related, and I figured I'd better figure out what that is because, you know, obviously couldn't get through the chimney, must have been a lot of work. So I started doing that, and then I got caught because I was secretly trying to learn the piano on my own. And then I ended up in a situation with a piano teacher. So now I had my own improvisatory stuff to try to figure out the piano by myself, lumped with all this classical music, which was, I could tell, was amazing. But then I also had the music going on in the kids in the school, and I liked all the same music as, you know, the other kids. So I had a lot of music, you know, in a short amount of time. And one thing just led to another. I did have another job. I was a paper boy at about 13 years old. And, you know, that was going pretty smoothly until my homeroom teacher wanted me to play in his son's rock band that played the school dances. Then there was a grown-up band that promised my mother they were going to sneak me in and out of the clubs and whatever, these private parties. And they promised that they'd pick me up, drive me back, make sure that I was, make sure I was safe and all that stuff. And then my mother really put, you know, just last straw in the camel, or what they call it, when she dumped the church organist job on me. And that was pretty much the end of my non-music career. So that paper boy was kind of a one-shot deal, but I had to give up the route. Sorry, I only got up to 13. Oh my God. So then I ended up, I did end up going to music school. I never really thought of being anything else, other than a paper boy. So I was kind of music all the way through. I did go to New England Conservatory. And I went there because I thought I could study all kinds of music. They were very specialized, but they had everything there. So After dealing with the dean and some people there, I kind of got the message that, look, kid, you can learn as much as you want in our school as long as you don't screw up our matriculation program so all the other students don't come and, you know, try to learn everything, because we need people in specific categories to matriculate them through the program, you know, so we stay in business. So I did. I learned a lot of jazz, Jackie Byard, people like that. I was a great scene in Boston at that time. I don't know about still, but definitely then you could play all kinds of gigs and all kinds of bands and all that. And then, of course, they had a great classical program, which I was, you know, drawn to as well. So I had a very well-rounded thing. When I got out of New England Conservatory, I was making a living already as a musician, you know, paying my bills. So I thought, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I stayed in Boston as long as I could. And then I came down to visit a friend who said, hey, why don't you just come down, check it out in New York, you know? And someone recognized me on the street and just approached me and said, hey, what are you doing now? Well, I'm just here for a few days. Oh, what are you doing? Well, we're looking for a piano player who has original music. You know, I'm like, okay, so you're like looking for me or something, you know? So then the next thing they're like, can you move down here? And I was like, I have a cheap place up there. I'm making a living, but maybe someday, what if we found you a place? So it was one of these kind of deals. So they found me a place in Jersey City, and I knew I had to make the move anyway, kind of a rite of passage at that time. So I went to Jersey City, but you know, that's just a PATH train from New York. And then some other guy ended up wanting me to play in his band, and he had a rent-controlled apartment on Central Park West. Not Central Park West, not a really great – people think it's a really nice neighborhood, but at that time it was not the greatest neighborhood, but it was Central Park West. I was in the city. I was by the park. So one thing just led to another. And, man, I mean, you don't have time for the whole story, but where should I go from here? I mean, I could go up to 2000 when I founded – Jazz for Peace. And the only reason I did that was because I happened to witness the events from the rooftop of a building on the Lower East Side, less than a quarter of a mile away. And words came out in the form of a poem, which I called Jazz for Peace. So my life since September 11th, 2001, my life has basically consisted of trying to live up the words of a poem.
So can you read the poem for us?
Well, what I usually do is, I have something else planned musically, but I usually recite it with a little bit of like free improvisation underneath it. Would you like to hear that?
Let's do that. Yes, please.
Okay. I hear jazz for peace coming through the trees. And in my heart, it fills me like a celebration. I see the light. And I want to follow. Inspired by the past contributions of those that came before. Laid the groundwork for us to build on. In this universal language that is a gift of all mankind. When we speak it, inspired by the creativity and artistry that stands for peace and love and humanity. An intelligence that leads to reaching potential that we have in our souls.
our total conscience and see that the gift of giving is our greatest privilege. I hear jazz for peace.
Thank you. That's Rick DeLaRada's Jazz for Peace, inspired by, I don't know if inspired is the correct word, but the events on 9/11.
Giving birth, you could say, kind of like your water broke.
This is true. Yes. So that poem and now the movement that it grew from, let's explore that. I mean, you're already gigging in New York, and maybe you touch on that, but then Jazz for Peace, how'd that come in being, and then what's its purpose?
Well, you know, one good thing I had going for me was by that time I was gigging in New York and around the world with some of the greatest jazz musicians ever. I mean, my CDs had come out and I was touring, you know. So the very first Jazz for Peace event had myself, Eddie Gomez on bass, Lenny White on drums, and Paquito de Rivera on saxophone. And it was my own quartet. And I was going places, you know, with my own quartet of people like, you know, with Sonny Fortune, you know, as a sideman in my band, and, you know, Victor Lewis and people like that. Sometimes I get off a plane, all the people would recognize my sideman. They wouldn't, you know, even hardly know who I was. But because of that momentum, you know, when 9/11 did hit, I was in a real situation. I was in a very interesting situation as a poet, as, you know, who only wrote one poem. So, you know, I'm sitting here with a poem. I don't know what to do with this thing, but I know it was done for, you know, it was on 9/11, and it came out of me, who I don't consider myself a poet, even though I'm a lyricist. But there must be some significance to this because, you know, I mean, it's all, you know, all these things happen. So what I'm going to do, so I thought, well, I'll read the poem. So when it opened up again, you know, when the country opened, I happened to have a headliner gig at the Savannah Jazz Festival. And I said, how many people are going to be there? They said 8,500 people. And they're all going to be at your thing because you're the headliner for this festival. So I said, wow, you know, I was feeling sorry for Edgar Allan Poe because, you know, I'm going to read a poem for 8,500 people. And this poor guy, you know what I mean? He's great, one of the greatest poets of all time. And I don't know if he ever, even his mother listened to his poems, you know? So anyway, here I was, and I did read the poem, and it affected a lot of people. You know, I mean, even the sidemen had no idea I wrote a poem. So they were just like, oh my God, what was that you just did on the stage? And everybody was, you know, in tears and emotional. And then it worked its way north, you know? I mean, Sherman marched south, but this poem marched north, you know? And by the time I got back, I was getting calls, you know, hey, what's this poem? What did you do down there? What's going on here? And then they said, are you going to do that for our concert? And that concert, the thing I had in Georgia was a trio, just me, Eddie Gomez, and Lenny White. And then I was picking up a quartet with Paquito de Rivera at that next one. And I said, I guess, they said, are you going to put it to music? I said, I guess so. I don't know, maybe, yeah. So I figured I better do that. So I did that, and I started the concert with that just to get that out of the way. But then when the press came out, it was all, DeLaRada starts out concert with Jazz for Peace and all, you know. So, you know, what am I going to do next was always the question. And I started doing little concerts around New York. And then I told my manager, listen, you know, while you're – little break in the action here and there, why don't you just call over to that United Nations over there, you know, right across the street here on 50th, right down the street, really across the island, but if you walk straight across, you'll be at the United Nations. Call them up and just see what they say about the idea. Tell them who I am. Tell them, you know, give them information on me, and just say he wants to bring a multicultural band in there and do, you know. So she just, you know, mucked around and messed around with it every now and then. I said, listen, there's no pressure. Just see, you know. And then almost a year later, she briefs me about a couple of things I had coming up with different people. And she says, you know, by the way, that United Nations thing, they want to do that. So I was like, I thought it was a big deal, but that's just me. I'm only the piano player. And, you know, I said, listen, here's the thing. It's a multicultural band, but you've got to have one Israeli person and you've got to have one Palestinian person. And I said, I don't care if the other guy's from Tuscaloosa, Oklahoma. I don't care where they're from. Just these two guys you got to have. Then whoever else, I don't, you know, put it, just whatever they're from is fine. I mean, there was, I think the drummer was from Europe or whatever. But I did have Israeli-Palestinian. And, you know, it was going along with something I'd been telling people, which was that I play. You know, I'd run around all over the place in New York playing jam sessions and playing with people and just hear, oh, yeah, you know, just whatever's going on. And I would find myself with Israeli and Palestinian people in the same room playing jazz because they come over here to study jazz. And I would tell people, you know, and they were like shocked. Like, I thought there's supposed to be a war over there. And I said, I don't know what to tell you. There's no, you know, and there was, I said, I know if I have a gig, there wouldn't be any problem. So we did this thing at the United Nations. I thought it was a big thing, but it took many years for people to think what I thought, but they started thinking it, you know. One time I played in Chicago and I got this letter from Barack Obama and he talked about that United Nations event, you know? I mean, on and on. I mean, people, in other words, people started like referring to that United Nations event and how, what they thought of it. But like I said, it wasn't the next day, you know? In fact, it wasn't even that day because we sent out a lot of press releases. I don't know where CNN was on that day, but they just, you know, I guess they had something to do. They had double booked or something.
What does Jazz for Peace do now? Tell us about that, because you can go to the website and find out a lot about it, but just tell our audience briefly.
Right. Oh, there are grants available, and so it's
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know what I'd really like to do, and of course, everyone thought I was crazy back in 2002 when I said we should work on this Palestinian-Israeli thing now, like 2002, you know? Of course, I was crazy back then, so I'm going to tell you something so crazy now. But I don't know about 20 years from now, and I hope we don't wait 20 years to consider this idea. I would like the world, and I mean the whole world, and I'm telling everybody, I would like to go from zero to one. I would like to go from zero funding for peace, 0%, and 100% funding for war. And no one's arguing, but you see them, these announcements, 30 billion Ukraine, 30 billion, billions of billion. I want to go. I want to take it down just a little peg here. I'm going to go down from 100, I'm so sorry, 99% funding for war. We'll still be at 99, okay? You can still go wacky, drop all these bombs. But I want to go 1% funding for peace and just see what happens. Because look at all that Jazz for Peace has done with zero. And I'm telling you, it would change the world for the better if we could fund peace at 1%.
And so that's how they do it. So they can apply for grants. How do they do that with your organization?
It's real easy. So to apply for a grant, a great idea to do, you know, I'm considered an entrepreneur now. So there's a website called enterprisezone.cc. I don't know where the CC comes from, but it's called enterprisezone.cc. And they have these little things. They ask, you know, Richard Branson or this one, that one. They ask them for 100 word answers to questions. And if you go there, you'll see a question that says, what kind of organization would you fund, you know, or what kind of organization do you want to put your, you know, everything behind? And in 100 words, I answered an organization that follows our easy steps to confirm, you know, to for success. And so you can go there, read a couple of those, send me an email, send us an email, of course, info@jazzforpeace.org. And you are in the driver's seat, because we've helped over 850 of the world's most outstanding causes. And if you have the will, Jazz for Peace has the way. We'll take you through those easy steps that you see on that website, in that little 100 word answer. We'll take you through those steps, and you'll be just as good as these 850 that have already received this funding.
Tell us about what's down the road for us. You know, this airs at the 1st of September, end of August. But what do you have performance-wise for Jazz for Peace coming up in the rest of the year?
Well, I'm trying to just – right now, I'm just trying to keep up with this massive flood of interest in this world, this cyber world. You know, I have – wow. See, I spent a lot of time trying to free Julian Assange. So I did about 150 performances online, a few of them in places like Nigeria and New York and et cetera. But now that Assange has been freed, and now that people are catching up to, you know, the there's just a tremendous, and so I'm using that to do little things like I did to you, or tell the story and play these little things. And I don't know, I'm flooded with these interview requests. So once I get past that, hopefully it'll get back to some kind of a normalcy or something like that. Or maybe this is the new norm. I don't know. But we do have the new book. So the new book, I really advise, it's called Paving the Path for Peace Through Music, The Amazing Story of Rick Dalarod and Jazz for Peace. Now get this book, because we can really help you with our foundation if you have this book, because there's all kinds of little things in it to to help fund you once we get rolling with you, help you help raise as much funds for you as possible.
And they find the book with your website and tell us
Amazon.
A little bit about
that.
Oh, it's
yeah,
at Amazon.
Yeah, just Amazon, Paving the Path for Peace Through Music. And you can just get it right off Amazon.
And if people want to find out more about you in our last minute here, and then maybe you could even play us out a little bit when we do that. But in our last minute, tell us how people can find you online, Jazz for Peace, and more about you.
Sure. So jazzforpeace.org is our website. RickDelorata.com is me. If you type in Rick Delorata famous quote, that would be a cool thing to do. And I'm going to play you out with something called The Island. It's by a Brazilian person named Ivan Lins. And I finally get to get some mileage out of this island shirt that I wore for the occasion.
Well, so let me do the thank you here. Thank you, Rick Delorata, for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your Jazz for Peace journey. Appreciate you coming on the show. And he's going to play us out.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
We may believe we've landed on a desert island. Bathe me in the waters, warm me in the moonlight, taste me with your kisses, find the secret places, touch me till I tremble, free my wings for flying, and catch me while I'm falling, keep your arms around me like there's no tomorrow. Let me know you love me on our little island. Not a soul can see us. Show me how to love you. Teach me how to please you. Lay your dreams beside me. Only stars will listen through our cries and whispers. You were made to love me, and I was made to love you. Keep your arms around me. Lose yourself inside me. Make it last forever. I can see the island shining in the distance. Now we're getting closer. Keep your arms around me, love. We're almost there.
This is Terry O'Reilly, host of Under the Influence, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Lori Renee Moore to Art on the Air. Lori is an award-winning emerging artist specializing in painting with an aim towards realism. She is a self-taught artist with a commitment to composition, consistency, and accuracy. Her artistic vision merges the analytical left brain, endeavoring to captivate the viewer not merely with the scene itself, but through her distinctive representation of it. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Lori. It's really nice meeting you.
Thank you so much, Esther and Larry. I'm very excited to be talking with you guys today, too.
Well, we're very happy to have you on. I'm glad to meet you at the Art Barn, and we were both exhibiting there. And our audience wants to know a little bit about you, your whole background, your what I call origin story. So I say it like how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Lori.
Okay. Well, I kind of took the long way around, but finally ended up here in the art. I think I've always had the art in me and calling to me, but I think that I was, through growing up, you take different paths to find your way in life. And I wore a lot of different hats before I got to where I am now. Grew up in a lower socioeconomic family in Waco, Texas, and lived there the first 18 years of my life. I have an older sister and a younger brother. Went to a small school, but it was a good school, and always just the weird kid and out of place. That hasn't really changed too much. Don't know if I'll outgrow that one.
Do you really want to?
I'm starting to get more comfortable with being who I am, because if I was like everyone else, I wouldn't be who I am, you know?
And you wouldn't have the vision to paint the way you paint.
No, I would just be another regular person. And, you know, I think you can't have it all. So there's plenty of things I lack, but, you know, I'm very good at this and I'm grateful for that.
Well, I may be jumping ahead, but like, did you have any arts experiences like in school and such, and then jumping ahead to your Navy career?
Okay. So I think that I was always like a little bit better at some of the art stuff that we did in classes and, you know, as a child and growing up, but it wasn't until I was in high school and took an art class that I had so much more focus time and, you know, my brain was probably just like more ready for it and made some really impressive strides as far as my abilities and skill honing. And that's when I was like, oh, like this is, I have something here, you know? And
in what areas in high school?
So we just had like a general sort of art class. Cause I went to a small school. We didn't have a big budget for a bunch of different things. We didn't have like pottery studios or anything like that. It was just kind of general. And I remember I did a portrait pencil drawing of Princess Diana. And that was really like a mark point for me where I'm like, oh, like this is something that I can do. And then somebody asked me, they saw that I was good at stuff and they were like, how do you paint smoke? And I'm like, I don't know, like, let me teach myself and then I'll teach you. That's just kind of what I do. I like look at something and I'm like, I want to do that. And then I just teach myself how to do it. So I painted this picture of Bob Marley and I actually still have it. And it's still really good for a first. It's nothing like what I can do now, but like I'm happy with it. And yeah, I took many years off not painting anything because I ran away and joined the circus, aka the U.S. Navy. I moved away from home at 18 when I joined the Navy, and I was an information systems technician. So I was an IT. So I worked on computers and fixed printers and programmed radio stations and worked with satellites just for telecommunications between our ship and other ships at sea or the shore.
So what was, how did you choose the Navy? Is it a family sort of branch or?
Well, my dad was in the Army and actually he's in the Army National Guard right now. So I guess he's still in the Army, but he was always encouraging me to join the military. And I was like, nah, pish, gosh, whatever. I'm not going to do that. And I went to community college. And before my first semester of college was over, I had already changed gears and decided to join the Navy. They were at like one of those like things where they have like a big room and there's a bunch of tables and different colleges sit at all the different tables so you can figure out where you want to transfer to. And the Navy was there. And they seemed to be the only ones not trying to call me over. And so that intrigued me. So I went to them and just, you know, saw what they were about. And I think my curiosity kind of like kept pulling me at it. I actually did not tell anybody that I had enlisted until I had already done it because I just didn't want anyone's opinions to influence my decision, because it was such a big decision.
Yeah, I see in one of your works you actually have a picture. I'm guessing it's either a destroyer or a frigate in one of the works you have.
Yeah, that's actually the ship I served on. That's a guided missile destroyer from the Arleigh Burke class. So Navy, they don't have battleships anymore. You know, when you think of like the battleship game, like they don't have battleships now. It's more like the modern day battleship. So it's really beefed up with a lot of science stuff, but it's pretty cool. Keep about like 300 people on there.
Right.
So it's kind of like, it's like a, I say it's like a high school. You like lock the doors and you're just like in there together for months.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
So were you sketching? Were you sketching this whole time?
No, I was like, I mean, I really just like put it aside for the most part. I maybe drew, painted less than 5 or 6 things over multiple years while I was in. I mean, you can't have a studio. You can't set anything up. You know, you barely have a locker for your belongings, you know, and you're moving around. And I was still very early in finding myself. And it wasn't something that was at the front of my mind at the time, because I was exploring a different path time.
And of course, when you're on a ship like that, it's like, isn't it usually 12 on, 12 off?
Yes. Yeah. For, well, it depends. For the ITs, we did 12-hour shifts. But if you're one of the lucky ones, me, who did 12-hour night shifts, well, they also wanted you to be around to do stuff during the day. So it's like 12 plus this and that. And you better be here for this and that. And then they would wake you up in the middle of the day to do fire drills and all sorts of stuff. And yeah, my sleep cycle has been whacked for sure.
So post-Navy, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, where does surgical nursing come in?
So coming towards the end of my 4 years, I was really feeling like 20 years in the military wasn't for me. And I felt pretty strongly about like either you do all of it so you can retire, or you get out after the first enlistment. I felt like that's like the way to maximize what you can get out of the experience. So I decided, I planned my exit, and I had a job lined up to be a tattoo artist in Bryan College Station, where Texas A&M is at. I found a shop. I had researched them and like, hey, I would like to apprentice. And I had everything lined up. And my husband at the time was also in the Navy, but he went on deployment and was on deployment for all the time. Like he went on deployment like 3 days after our son was born and was gone until I had already been out for a few months. We came to Texas and I was there, and these were ended up being not the most trustworthy people I had kind of gotten into bed with, and it wasn't working out. I kind of noticed some money things, brought it up. We needed to split ways. I tried to find a different place to go to in the area, but they called around and called me everything but a white woman, so I couldn't really find a different place. And then my husband was having trouble finding a job when he got back from deployment. So we came up to Indiana to visit his family, which is here. New Paris is where his family's at. We came up to visit since we didn't have anything going on. And then he just never left. So I went home, packed up our whole house, brought it up here. And we had one vehicle at the time. So I'm like, okay, one of us needs to work. So it was going to be him. And I'm like, well, I need to do something, bring in income. I had it's called a post 9/11 GI Bill. So if you go to school full time, as long as one of your classes is in person, the rest can be online and you'll get like a monthly stipend. So it was like I was like going to school became my job. And I'm just like, I look up which associate's degrees are like the highest earning. Like I'm trying to like think tactically, like, okay, I got to provide for my family. Like, how do I do this like efficiently, quickly? And at first I was going to be a dental hygienist. Then I saw it's not so easy to find a job, and you ended up looking what's other options with what I've already done. And all the credits I had already taken could count towards this degree. So I switched it to nursing. And then after I started on that path, I found out they want you to have a bachelor's. So I'm like, well, I mean, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I applied to a bunch of different colleges and ended up choosing to go to Goshen College. That's where I got my bachelor's of science nursing with a minor in art. And during my nursing program there, I just by chance was pulled into a C-section surgery. I was supposed to be on a pediatric rotation, but there were no children there, which is good. No sick kids. That's nice. But since I wasn't doing anything, they're like, hey, there's a C-section. You want to see it? Experience. Come look. So they let me come watch. And it was just like, I just felt like a light bulb. Like, oh, like, this is very interesting. You know, just like watching like something so like most people in their life may never see. And, you know, new life was happening at the same time. And it was just like a lot of things. I was just like, oh, whoa, this is awesome. So I decided I wanted to do, if I'm going to do nursing, I would like to do surgical nursing. So I worked towards that, got myself a externship, which is like, it's like a full-time job between my junior and senior year at Goshen in their surgery. It's kind of wild. I applied for the position because you have to apply, sent my stuff off like 20 minutes before like the deadline on the due date. So I barely got it in on time. And then you had an interview. They only had one spot. Out of all the people that interviewed, they picked me. And they told me because they're like, we see a passion in you. So I was very fortunate. That's actually how I met my husband, was during that externship, my current husband. And I was there for a bit. And then I went to, after a while, I moved to Memorial in downtown South Bend and started mainly being neurosurgery. I kind of could do everything, but like, I was like the most passionate about neurosurgery. It worked great for me because in surgical nursing, it's more episodic. You have patient, start, finish, done. You know, you only have one patient at a time. Great for my attention span. Also, it's not just all on you. It's not just me and this one patient. There's a surgeon or two. There's an anesthesiologist. So there's at least two doctors in the room. Then there's other staff members around. So you're part of a team with like one big goal and you're working as a team. You're facilitating like this whole goal together. And I love it. There's plenty of things about any job that can kind of like ruffle your feathers. I didn't leave my job because I hated my job. I walked away from that position to put more focus on my family and what my family needed at the time.
And so at that time then, so when is the art introduced in full in your life?
Well, COVID. So COVID happens. You're not doing surgeries, nothing elective, because you do a surgery. Somebody has to stay in the hospital after that surgery. Well, there's lots of people in the hospital that need to be there because of COVID. So you can't just be like filling it up if it's like at max capacity. So a lot of us surgical nurses were furloughed. So I was at home for a bit and I was able, you know, this art that was in me and tugging at me at the back of my mind this whole time, you know, I finally had a little bit of space in my life to, you know, have an outlet and, you know, just cooped up and this energy just came out. Like I made this big portrait painting of Cher. I got to see her perform live the summer before and she took me like 3 days. I was just drank a lot and danced around and listening to Cher very loudly in my underwear, got this thing done pretty quickly, I think, in 3 days. And then it was just like, I wanted more and more. Every time I do something in my art, like I learn something from it and I get a little bit better with the next one. And it's like become just this addiction. Like I just, and I think like the more I do, the more I can do. So how many paintings am I going to make in a year if I'm trading my time for money as a nurse, you know, working very hard at a very like physically and emotionally demanding job, coming home. I have 3 children. One of them is, you know, not even 2 yet. That's very physically and emotionally demanding. There's only so much resource of you have. And so you kind of have to think about it wisely. Like, you know, you only get one kick at the scan. What do you want to do with your life? I want to make more art. So if I can make more of it and sell it, then I can trade my paintings for money instead of my time for money. And I can make more paintings.
It's true.
Now, the Cher picture, I'm looking at your website right now, is the one with where she has the feathers and things like that. Is that the one you did?
Yeah. And if you get like very close to it in person, you can see like little individual like pieces of the feathers. Like, it's detailed.
No, I mean, it's amazingly detailed. It's close to photorealistic, and yet it still has an artsy quality to it, like a painting quality. I mean, some of your other work is pretty close to photorealistic also. I mean, the one you have of the guy in the Navy uniform holding a baby, you have the actual photograph you work from, and then you painted it. And really, it's pretty close to photorealistic as a painting in how you do that. So tell us maybe a little about your process. Do you work from a photo, like if someone comes to you like a commission, obviously for that, or when you're thinking about something inspirational, tell us a little about your process.
I've mostly worked from photograph, but I'm trying to grow past that. The danger in veering away from that is if you're trying to create something with your imagination to make it look real, there's a lot about the natural world that you have to understand and to be able to pull it off. You know, the way light hits and reflects and passes through things and illuminates. And so if you can use a photo for the majority of your reference, if you're working towards the goal of realism and being representational, photo really helps. That picture of the Navy guy with the baby is actually my oldest son, and that's his dad holding him. And I made that for him as a present. There was very few. I actually made it with only red and green, blue, white, black, or I didn't even have black, I don't think. And I feel like that really taught me a lot and prepared me for moving into the path that I'm on now.
And what is that path you're on now?
I'm just always trying to improve wherever I'm at, surveying how I can get to the next step and having big, big dreams and just working towards that big goal, setting my sights high, just trying to snowball everything, all of my effort.
So what's on your easel right now?
A very weird picture of two of my weird friends dressed up for a 90s party. So it's not a commission, but I try to stay busy between commissions. It's pretty great, though.
Oh, how fun.
And what's some of the other art? I'm scanning through your website, but some of the other things you do besides portraits, you do pets and some of the other non-portrait stuff.
Yeah. So representational isn't just about portraits for me. There's a whole gemstone series that I did this year. And just in the past 4 months, I've tried to move into oils out of acrylics. And it's really felt like a leapfrog in my abilities. I'm looking at the disco ball that I just made on the wall out of oils, and it's just a bunch of gemstones up there. It's great. I think I like to look at things and think, how do you do that? And then teach myself how to do that.
Yeah. So what is that? What are you doing? Are you reaching toward YouTube and gleaning information from that? Is it just paint on canvas, trying to figure it out?
I am a voracious reader. It's good. And also sometimes I call it procrastilearning, you know, instead of just getting to it. I'm like, well, let me just read two more books, you know? So I have this just growing library of used books. And my husband's like, are we going to have to get some more bookshelves? And I read forums. Sometimes I watch YouTube videos. I'm just like constantly trying to learn more about my materials, the materials that are out there, technique. There's different kinds of techniques. I'm just trying to master my craft.
What's your daily process like? Do you have a time that you set aside to do painting, or is it just kind of a serendipity? Like, okay, I'm going to read books. Okay, now I'll go paint. Or you have a daily schedule for that?
Right. And do you have a 2-year-old attached to you during that time?
Yeah. Right. So it's very hard with my family's needs to find painting. And I beg, borrow, and steal to find time. But I do have kind of a schedule. I get up, baby and I, we go to the gym first thing in the morning. We're there for 2 hours. I just shower like while I'm there, so I'm good to go. We come home, snack. I put her down, and like her nap time is like my protected, like I'm working. That's my work time for sure. And if I don't get any other time today, I better get that time. So I'll work as long as I can. And then if I can find time and energy later, I will work some more. I try to make as much progress as I can with the limited time that I have available. So I try to not just waste all my time. But I spend all the time that I can't paint thinking about painting. That's what I do. A lot of my reading and daydreaming and writing down ideas and books. And, you know, I've just lists and lists of paintings that I would love to do. And it's just, I'm just like hungry for more painting time. But she's only going to be little for a short amount of time. And it's coming. It's on the horizon.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up here. I want you to be able to share your website or contact information if people want to reach out for you for, you know, like a portraiture that you may do and everything like that.
So if you want to go to my website, it's morethanportraits.com, M-O-O-R-E, like my last name, like that if it's clever. And it's nothing impressive, but it's just like it's a website you can go to and find some examples of my work and find some links to where else you can find me on the internet, such as Instagram. It's LRM_artwork is my handle. And Facebook, not much following there. Most people seem to be on Instagram. And I also have an Etsy, and you can reach that through a link on my website as well.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Air and sharing your art journey, even though some of it was not artistic. And we thank you for your service. That's Lori Renee Moore. She is an ambitious and emerging artist. Thank you so much for sharing your art journey with our audience.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Yeah, thank you very, very much.
We'd like to thank our guest this week on Art of the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.